There's a new music business for the 21st century, and now is the best time ever to be in the music business. Because in the new music business, the artist is in charge. My name's Rick Barker, and I've been blessed to make a living in the music business for almost 30 years. I'm a personal manager, author, speaker. Many know me as the manager who launched the career of Taylor Swift. But what I'm most proud of are the thousands of artists from around the world that I manage daily and help navigate this crazy business. This podcast is designed to keep you up to date with the changes in the business and to give you the mindset, tools, and resources that you need to succeed.
Helping you navigate the music industry, here's Rick Barker with the Music Industry Blueprint Podcast.
So most of you see Michael on the interviewer side of the table. Very seldom does he get to become the interviewee. And what I started thinking about when him and I were talking recently, and I was a part of this really cool thing that he did, is I'm like, I don't know that my audience ever got to hear your story. Because I first met Michael, I was on a summit of his, and I'd seen all the success that him and his band were having. And then he was starting to share that success with everyone else. And I'm like, I don't know that my audience really knows the story of you and your band and why you're this guy that's qualified to share what it is that you're sharing. So I just wanted to take this time to give them a chance to really kind of get to know you a little bit.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate you having me. And yeah, you know, I think we've done probably three interviews together now, and I'm always interviewing you. So it is kind of like a turn the table type of situation.
So tell everyone why you're always in the room with the twinkly lights and the keyboard.
You know, I'm actually on my way to Mars right now, and I'm going to be one of the first humans to inhabit Mars. And so this is, you know, this is just my window to outer space. So I am in outer space right now.
Wonderful. And how's it, Liz? Is the COVID affecting your, you know, your social distancing when you're in outer space too? Or you guys got like six planets apart kind of rule or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like 2.5 million miles distance you're supposed to keep away from other astronauts. So we're taking that pretty seriously.
Let's jump right into why your band was successful and what you guys did that makes it so successful, and what it is that you're sharing with people now to help them do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my band's, we started when we had just graduated high school, and we lived in a really small town called Vermilion, South Dakota. And a lot of people, when I tell them I'm from South Dakota, they're like, wow, like people actually live there. But, you know, we came from South Dakota. And when we started the band, I think like a lot of people watching this right now, we had really big dreams, really big visions, but we weren't really sure how to make it happen. And I remember booking our first tour ever and being really excited because we're like, oh, we're rock stars. We're going to be going on this tour. And we went out and it took so much time and effort to like, to line up all these shows. We did it all ourselves.
Was this pre-internet? Was this pre like social media where you could build stuff? So what years are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're talking about like 2010, 2011. So Facebook was like a thing and social media was starting to come up and it became like a big part of our strategy, but like, and like it was, we had just transitioned away from the MySpace era. Like MySpace was where we booked some of these first shows. And we quickly realized that booking the shows and going on tour is one thing, but like actually being successful doing it, like no one came out to the shows. And so we were just like playing to the bartender in the back of the room. And at the time we were living in our vans, sleeping in Walmart parking lots. And yeah, I remember like for meals, we'd go into Walmart, get a big jar of peanut butter and a stack of flour tortillas. And that was like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Was eating peanut butter tortillas. Sometimes we throw like a banana in there. And that would, you know, be awesome. And, you know, that was a challenge. That was a struggle. We just didn't really know how do we get our music, in front of the right people who are going to enjoy it. We didn't really know how to grow our audience. And the thing that really kind of changed everything around for us was an idea that our lead singer had that was basically, you know, at the time we were huge fans of All Time Low, Blink-182, Mayday Parade, kind of this pop punk, pop rock scene. And they had millions of fans. And before their shows, you know, they would have these huge lines of thousands of people waiting outside, sometimes for like a day in advance or like from the morning of, and not really doing anything better than just waiting. So our lead singer had this idea. And what if we walk up to those people and introduce ourselves and share some clips of our songs and see if that's a good way to grow our audience. And so we started doing that. There were six of us in the band. So we split up into groups of two and we started following those other tours. And I was like a super shy, awkward kid. So I was like,
are you like playing them songs off your phone or off your iPod or whatever at the time?
Yeah. You know, it was on, some of us had iPods. I think iPhone is like a relatively new thing.
Right.
But we had these headphones that like could break up. So it was two people could listen at once to like okay, one great. Each. And so that's how they would listen to the clips. And they're like 20, 30 second clips. And yeah, I was super awkward. So like that was a really difficult thing for me to do. But what we found was just that worked incredibly well. You know, I think because the people we were meeting were like really high quality fans. Like they're people who actually go to shows and
right.
spend money on bands and they care. And so we sold 24,000 CDs doing that in about 4 months. And because of that, one of the bands we were doing it on was called All Time Low, and they had millions of fans and they heard about what we were doing and they decided to bring us on tour with them. And so then
there you go.
All of a sudden that was like a huge big break, dude. I remember when we first heard the news that we were going to go on tour with them, like we were jumping up and down like little girls. Cause they were like our favorite band of all time. And I still remember like meeting them backstage in the green rooms for the first time and just being in like shock. I'm like celebrity shock. This is amazing. And, you know, we were playing for a few thousand people like a night and it was awesome. And that really snowballed into a lot of opportunities where we got to meet a lot of our favorite artists and go on tour around the world and got to a point where we released an album that hit number two on iTunes. We had about 24 million streams on Spotify and about 17 million views on YouTube. And when I reflect on our career, there was really like probably 3 to 5 strategies that we did that really made the biggest impact. But one of those, and probably the biggest one, was what we call tour hacking, which was that idea of like meeting people online for shows. And it still works really well. Like when people are willing to go out and do it and you're not in the middle of a global pandemic.
Right. And there is a tour, not every single one of them just got canceled in 2020. So let's talk about
exactly.
that. Let's talk about a lot of times people will say, well, there's no touring, so I can't do that. And tour hack is a strategy. It's a strategy that will stand the test of time, no matter what, whether it's tour hacking live, tour hacking online. So I want people to understand tour hacking is a strategy. The tactics may change based on various situations. So what tactic would you use today for tour hacking, knowing that all the tours have been canceled? There's not tons of music bands at festivals. CMA Music Fest got canceled. There's none of that going on. What is one of your strategies that you would put into place or tactic for the tour hack strategy today?
Absolutely. So I love what you just said, because that's so true. Because really, like, the fundamental principles of what made that work were the same principles that make any business work. It's like you find out where do the people who are going to get the most value from what you offer hang out. You go put yourself in front of them, you introduce yourself, you connect with them, and you make some sort of offer. And so that process is, you know, it's a platform agnostic. Like it just depends on where your people hang out and finding them.
Well, and let me say something real quick too. It's and when Mike was talking about, and I jump back and forth, guys, because I call him Michael, I call him Mike, I call him a bunch of different things. Some I can't say on the show, but daddy maker, you know. So one of the things that he explained is when he went up and he met these people. So before we talk about the online version of this, I want to explain something from the offline version. They didn't run up and slam headphones on people's heads who they hadn't introduced themselves to or didn't start having conversations with. It would be really weird. He's probably going to get punched out in a parking lot if he just runs up, throws his headphones on people and says, listen to my music. What he did was he said he went in, found out where the people were located, where were they hanging out, introduced themselves. And then when the time was right, hey, would you like to check out some music? So I'm visualizing this picture of you and your six bandmates just running up, throwing headphones on people and making them listen to your music. Because when we show up on social and that's all you did was just send a YouTube link or a Spotify link, which I get all the time on my Instagram, that's like running up and just throwing the headphones on someone and hoping they listen. But the difference is we may never push play because there was no introduction. All right, now back to our regularly scheduled program, already in progress. Tour hacking.
Yeah, that's
the virtual world.
100% right. And even like the process of how we would connect with those people and introduce ourselves was something that we really honed over time and does apply exactly to the online version of it as well. So I'm happy to like, you know, to share my quote unquote, yes, my shtick.
Yes.
So I would always, I remember walking up and you'd always want to talk to the people at the front of the line first because those people have been waiting there the longest. And usually those are the people who it's like, you start talking to them and you mention you're a musician and their ears perk up and they're like, whoa, because they're just, you know, they're huge fans of music in general. And so I'd always walk up to the front of the line and the first question I'd ask is, hey, are you guys here for the All Time Low show? And like, of course they're there for the All Time Low show. They're waiting in line for it. But that was a really good question to start out with because it's a really simple question they can say yes to. It's an icebreaker.
Like the sales guy, ask questions that you get yeses. Get them to start nodding their head.
Right, probably. I didn't realize at the time, but I think 100%. And it's also good too because that kind of puts things into context because, you know, we could just be a random like bum asking for money or something. So if you ask them, are you here for the All Time Low show? It kind of lets them know, oh, this is good. He's going to ask something about All Time Low. And so then when they said yes, then I would ask, hey, is it okay if I talk to you for a few minutes while you're waiting in line? And that was really important to ask because like you mentioned, you don't want to be the person who just like literally just shoves your headphones on their head and there's like resistance and they're not like, you want to make sure that it's okay that they're talking with them. And so then when they said yes, I would say, awesome. So my name is Michael. I play a keyboard in a band called Paradise Fears. And basically we're huge fans of All Time Low and someday we want to go on tour with them. And one thing that we noticed is before the shows, there's literally thousands of people waiting outside in line. And so I thought, you know, something that would be good to do is just to introduce ourselves and share some clips of our songs. So if you're interested, I've got some headphones here, some clips of our songs, but I should probably warn you that most people who listen to it enjoy it so much that they start to like cry and faint. And so, you know, if you need any tissues, I have a backpack full of tissues. I've got really fast reflexes. I'll make sure you don't like hit your head on the crowd. And that was like my go-to icebreaker.
They love that though. And what people who were here at the beginning, when I asked Mike about his background and he talked about Mars and we just kind of started flowing with this 2.5 million miles away, that's your personality. So what you did was, because you said earlier, you're pretty introverted and you're not that guy, you used your superpowers that allowed you to feel comfortable in front of complete strangers. And I think that's something you guys really need to write down is that, and think about. Too often you're trying to be something that you're not, which makes it not only awkward for you, but it makes it awkward for us on the receiving end as well. So the fact that he went to his superpower, so great. So you loosen them up. Now they kind of know your personality. Who's going to say no to that? You know, sorry, dude. No, you're a loser. Get out of here. No one's going to say that. So you did it in such a way, and they're not going anywhere, that they wanted to hear this music. Great. So now that we've got the headphones on, how did the sales part come along? And then let's talk about what we can do today during this time. And it's going to be shut down for a while, what we can do today. So what was this? You get the headphones off, they get done, you give them the tissue, and then what?
So usually because we had those headphones where two people could listen at once, usually there's groups of four or five. So while they were listening, we would have a conversation with other people. We'd ask them questions about like, so how long you been an All Time Low fan for? What's your favorite All Time Low song? Is this your first All Time Low show? And right. we just build a rapport. Like we'd have a conversation with them. We'd build a relationship. We'd usually be playful and joking around and having fun. And then when everyone had a chance to listen, then we'd be like, so like, what did you guys think? Did he like it? Did he hate it? And 99% of people would say, yeah, this is awesome. You know, where can I listen to more? Like, are you on Spotify? Like, do you have a CD? We're like, well, you know, if you guys are interested, I actually do have a backpack full of CDs. This is called Battle Scars and it's produced by the same guys that produced All Time Low and Mayday Parade. And so it's kind of like they got together and they had a baby and yeah. You know, this would be the baby. I think if you liked the songs, if you're a fan of All Time Low, then I think you'd actually really like the CD. So normally there's 11 songs on it, so we normally charge $10 for it. But to be honest, you know, the reason that I'm out here right now isn't necessarily because I'm trying to sell as many CDs as possible. It's just because, you know, I wanted to connect with as many people like you as possible. So, you know, if if you have $10 on you and you really want to support us, then we really appreciate it. It goes towards recording new music and going on tour. But even if you don't have $10, if you like the songs, then I want to give you a CD anyways. And almost that works really, really well for us.
So yeah, you're giving like, them an option of giving you nothing in front of their friends, knowing that you just said all the money goes to support all this other stuff, or they could pay 10 bucks.
Exactly.
Yep. Great option.
And it was awesome. I mean, when we talk to a group of like five people, then usually there's at least like two people that would get a CD, and sometimes like the whole group would get them. Then we would sign it for them, and everyone else in the line is seeing this whole process happening. They see us signing like the CDs. They see us taking pictures with the people in line.
They think you're like, famous. If they're in the back of the room and they don't know yet, they think you're famous. And because you're a musician with a CD at a concert, you are famous. Once again, the perception is brilliant. Okay. So now we've started making some money. Now we've started moving ourselves through these various things. You guys got a little recognition because of the amount of CDs that you were able to sell. What would you suggest today, that same exact strategy, if I said, here's 10,000 CDs that you have to sell in the next 3 months, there's no concerts, you can't go speak to people live. You can only use the tools that are readily available. And let's throw one more on you. And you can't run ads.
Ooh. Okay.
But hold on. And maybe we'll put the ads back in because there was some expenses when you had to travel to see people. So yeah. What would you use your – okay, so I'll rephrase that. Now I just let the cat out of the bag. Ads is coming into play. What would you use that travel money that you no longer have to use for hotels and food and gas and repairs on the van? What would you use that money for to help you get to these shows? Okay, now we're set up perfectly. All right, roll. Awesome. Now you've got it. I almost took your superpower away from him.
There's some other things we could have gone other places with it, but it's awesome that you asked this question, because this is actually, even before there was a global pandemic, this is something that we started running into a lot. Because what I found when I started this business, I was kind of reflecting with Paradise Fears. I'm like, okay, what made the biggest impact? And I wanted to teach those things. I'm like, okay, tour acting's awesome. And so a couple of the first, you know, artists that we worked with, two guys in the band went out and did it, made $11,000 in like a single month. I'm like, awesome, this still works. But what I found is that when I told people this story, they're like, that's awesome. That's an awesome story. I can see why it works. I don't want to go out and do that. I don't want to.
Can't afford to do it.
Yeah. I've got a family. I don't, you know, it doesn't seem very glamorous, which I totally understand.
I don't tour.
Exactly. And so part of our quest was sort of to figure out like how can we apply this principle online? And basically the number one thing that we teach now is what we call virtual tour hacking, which is essentially the exact same process, the exact same principle, but you do it online. So like you have these conversations online. And what we found has been the most effective has been running Facebook and Instagram ads that literally start out and just being like, hey, what's up? I'm blank. And I think if you're a fan of blank and blank that you might like our song, click on the send message button. We'll send you a song. And so they click on send message, you send them the song, they're listening to it. And then you have a conversation with them, essentially like we had a conversation with people online, how we would ask them some questions about their, like, about
so
their
you
music
send
case.
Them to the messenger bot and let the messenger bot be the interviewer and go
exactly.
back and forth based off keywords. Okay. So you're taking them from Facebook to another Facebook owned product, basically at this point. Having that automated conversation. Okay. So you've gone and identified through targeting interests, blank, blank, blank bands. And you run this quick little, how long's your ad?
Like 10, 15 seconds. It's just like a very short introduction.
Super easy. You don't ask them to watch a whole video. You don't ask them to listen to my album and tell me what you think. You say, once again, repeat what you said. That was so key.
Yeah, I was like, hey, what's up? Michael, I play a keyboard in a band called Paradise Fears. I think if you're a fan of All Time Low, Mayday Parade, or the Plain White Tees, that you might like our songs. So if you're interested, click on the send message button below. I'll send you a song, and I'm looking forward to talking more.
Done.
Something like that.
So simple, so easy. And you can't personalize it yet because it's a Facebook ad. But at some point, once they get your Messenger information, Messenger can start. So that's why it's cool to take them from, it's like you cast that wide net to all those fans of those bands. Then when you bring them into Messenger, then you're able to now start having more personal conversations. And what's interesting about that, and my friend Paul Ace talks about this, you can do an 80% automation, which only means you have to do a 20% kind of human interaction thing. You're golden at that point. Mm-hmm. So now that they've received this first song, now what?
Yeah. So usually the way that we break it up is at the very beginning, we actually recommend that you just have these conversations organically. So for the first like 20 people or so, you actually just talk to them like a human. So like they click on send message, and then you have a what we call like your Intune survey framework, which is basically asking them some questions about who are some of their favorite artists or favorite songs that they're listening to and why, and asking some questions about whether they go to live shows or not, or if, like, what's their favorite live show. Ask them some questions about it. Actually, it uses a similar framework to like the ask method, which I know Correct. You're familiar with.
Yep.
And then the call to action at the end that we usually have is based on how they answer, if they're a good fit, if they're, you know, quote unquote qualified, then we'll invite them to a private VIP community that usually we host on like a private Facebook group. And
I've been telling people that for a while. The sooner you can get them to exclusivity, to something, we call it behind the velvet rope. Everyone knows that the whole world can hang out on a Facebook page, but when you invite them to this, and I'll throw in one of my strategies here, what I always tell people is I would love to send you a personal invitation. Just tell me where to send it. Now I've collected their email. So I've been helping artists collect emails more by sending them invitations to things than saying, hey, you want a newsletter and a download of a song that I wrote? Send me your email, subscribe to my list. No, nobody wants that anymore. But what they want is contact. What they want is something that they don't think everyone else has. So as soon as you guys can start creating these exclusive communities, all you're going to do is send them a personal invite, put the box for their email address. You just basically said, give me your email address without saying, give me your email address. I have something I personally want to send you. We're also doing that on Instagram. Hey, DM me on Instagram and I'll send you and tell me where to send an invite to this. Mm-hmm. It's like people love, and when they say, well, why can't you just send it here? Just say, well, the way the automation system works to make sure that you get in to this exclusive community goes through the email, and don't worry, we don't spam or anything like that. We're getting more emails now than we were trying to get people to sign up for newsletters. So another thing that I love what you said was that you're asking them a lot of different conversations, because what's happening when you ask questions and you're in a position to look at the answers may give you information you didn't have to say, wow, 30% said they also like this band. Maybe we should start targeting that band in our Facebook ads. Wow. 40% said they love to buy merchandise. They love taking a t-shirt from their favorite shows. Let's go ahead and tag them with merchandise. So when we have a merchandise offer, we let these people see it first. Hey, then the email goes, hey, wanted you to be the first to know because I know how much you love merchandise. So what surveys do is they allow you to have proper conversations with the right people. If someone responded, I never buy merchandise at shows, that person needs to be tagged that, because you don't want to waste your email going, hey, you said you love to buy merchandise. They're like, no, I was the person who said I didn't like to buy merchandise. So that's why having tools like this is so important. And that's why when you treat this like a business, guys, Brendan Burchard said it to me. He says, become a dork about the data or data, depending on what part of the country you're in. When you understand the numbers, when you understand what people are saying, and like Ryan Levesque, the ask method we were talking about, when you're able to have the proper conversation, it's like I tell people, when you go to Apple, go to the website, it's going to ask you a question. Are you a student or are you a small business? They're going to sell you the same computer. At the end of the conversation, the same computer is going to be sold, but the conversation leading you up to that purchase is going to be completely different. So that's why I love the fact that you guys ask questions. And the great thing, there's so many free tools that are out there for for you guys to be able to do all this stuff with, besides running the ads. But you can spend 10, 15 bucks on an ad for the price of a tank of gas. Let me just say this. For a price of a tank of gas, you could actually go out and get 50,000 to 100,000 video views on your 15, 10 second message. And if 1% of those convert and come into your new community, now you've got the possibility of having someone one step closer to being able to buy your music, buy your merch. Because what Michael and I always talk about, in today's age, no one has to pay for your music. The consumer can consume your product for free. What they invest in is the relationship. And the more you know about someone, the stronger the relationship, just like in life. This has been fun, man. I love this because it'll become a podcast. It'll become a YouTube video. I'm going to put it inside my course, all kinds of fun stuff. And I'm excited because, you know, coming up soon, I get a chance to hang out with you and a bunch of other really smart people. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, dude. So we're running our third annual Success with Music virtual music conference. And it's been virtual for the past 2 years, but now it especially has to be virtual because of the global pandemic. But basically what we do is we find 15 of the top experts in the music industry, including Rick Barker, and we interview them.
Guys. I was excited.
Rick is awesome. You're one of the big dogs for sure. I remember the first year that we ever did the summit, you know, I started a new business. I was learning how to do this stuff. And I made the mistake of basically interviewing some really amazing people, but then, you know, not being prepared enough or not letting people know, like, hey, by the way, this is going live. If you want to prepare it and like send it to your list and whatever. So it was like a few days beforehand. I'm like, oh, by the way, this is happening. If you want to like share it. And not very many people, you know, like reached out to their list because it was just way too short notice. But Rick was like, boom. He's like, yeah, like let's do it, man. And I remember that first event, you know, if it wasn't for you, like there wouldn't have been that many people who were attending live. But because, you know, you were a part of it, literally there were thousands of people that attended live. And I remember in the comments, like the community was all like, Rick is awesome. Rick. And I remember being like, oh, that's interesting. Like, yeah, like, you know, this is Rick's tribe. This is Rick's people. So yeah, basically the whole premise of the summit is that there's 15 people who are experts in different areas. So we have like music licensing experts teaching how to get on film and sync. We have Spotify experts talking about how they've gotten a billion streams on Spotify. We have people talking about production and how to take, you know, a demo and bring it and make it actually professional. We've got people talking about how they've gotten tens of millions of views on YouTube. So really the core focus is how do you grow an audience as a musician online when you can't necessarily rely on live shows? And then also, how do you monetize your music career so that you can make it sustainable, so that you can focus on it full time? You don't necessarily have to work a day job in order to support yourself.
So also too, some of you are going to see names that you're familiar with. And I want you to understand that what they were talking about last year is going to be very different than what they're talking about this year. So don't just say, oh, I've already heard a lot of these people, or I've already heard this. What I want you guys to understand is, first off, it's free. So come listen to these interviews. And obviously, you know, if you want to go deeper, you'll be given that opportunity to do so. But what I've been talking, a lot of the people that Michael interviewed, I have personal relationships with, and we've been on the phone, you know, all the time, me picking their brain going, hey, what shifts are you having to make right now? Because things are virtual and they've got some really cool ideas and they're coming to me, hey, what shifts should I be making right now? It's like, I've been blessed to have been able to, I want to say this as humbly as I can. I try to support as many people in our teaching community as I can, whether it be I buy courses and let people in on my courses and whatever the case may be. We're always trying to figure out the best way as a collective to serve you, the musician. So Michael and I mean, we talk every couple weeks, sometimes depending on if he's making babies or not, then he's kind of out of the loop at that point and I won't interrupt him. He's got a brand new baby girl coming. So we're excited about that. But what it is we're always communicating with each other, sharing ideas and strategies to best serve our communities, because all of you are in this big community, whether you know it or not. You're in the independent artist community. You're in the do it yourself, done with you, whatever you want to call yourself. So we're always trying to help each other out. So when you go down, because I had somebody send me an email not too long ago, I wasn't part of something, said, oh, I've already heard these people. I'm like, you are such a moron. You know, the fact that you think that you know everything, and then I can look at their stuff and say, it's time to stop learning and start doing. I've said that to a couple people. Come hear what the latest things that they're doing. Like Michael Elsner is going to have to talk about how do you pitch to film and television when no film and television is going on. That's what I was talking to him and Chris SD about. It's like, there's nothing in production. And then they started telling me about these other cool strategies, you know? And then all of a sudden, Graham Cochran and these guys were coming to me going, man, we're really having to teach people how to record at home because they can't go into studios right now. And Chris, Produced Like a Boss Chris, she was saying the same thing. It's like all these things that we've been telling you guys to do for the longest time, the reason I'm laughing right now is because now you're forced to do it. So I love it. All this stuff you've invested in, all this education you've invested in, now it's time to do it. Thank you for putting that group of people together again. The reason I always tell everyone about it is because I haven't done one yet. I went to a summit to learn how to do virtual summits based off the fun that I've had with you and also the bad experience I've had with other people. And I won't mention any names, but I wanted to be able to do one really soon as well because of what I learned from you. You were one of the first summits I was ever on. So I always appreciate you. We'll make sure that you have a link to go get this. Just go ahead and write this down, rickbarker.com/music2020. rickbarker.com/music2020. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you're watching this on YouTube, there'll be a link below. If you, wherever it is, just go there, get yourself registered for this free training. And man, thank you again. I appreciate you. And we'll talk again sooner rather than later.
Sounds good. Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Rick.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast, and thank you for the question. As you see, there is no one-size-fits-all model with the music business, so I do appreciate that. To help you figure out where you are and where you want to get to, head on over to the website, rickbarker.com, and take the Are You Ready for a Manager assessment. While you're there, you can also click on the podcast link and leave a message. And who knows, maybe you'll be featured in an upcoming episode. If you know someone who can benefit from this, I would really love it if you would give it a share, if you would subscribe it onto whatever platform that it is that you're listening to, and I will talk to you on the next episode. Ciao.
You've been listening to the Music Industry Blueprint Podcast with Rick Barker. You can follow Rick on Twitter at Rick Barker Music. And remember, you don't drown by falling into the water, you drown by staying there.